In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
While the word boondoggle sounds like something out of the Victorian era or earlier, it's actually a fairly recent word dating from the 1920s. But it exploded into common usage in 1935 during the Depression when New York City aldermen were investigating how exactly the city had blown through $3 million of relief funding from the Roosevelt administration. Isn't history amazing? Hard to believe now, but back then, elected officials actually cared about public money being wasted, because the witness testified that the millions went to help pay to teach the unemployed ballet dancing, shadow puppetry, and 2 hours a day to make boondoggles. Not ever hearing that word before, the alderman asked for an explanation. Basically, they were decorative trinkets that kept them occupied. Which is why boondoggle became associated with wasteful government spending on fruitless endeavors, wasting money on things that have little or no value. In today's climate of no end of money for climate, there's another word that just doesn't get used enough, malfeasance. In fact, the only time you hear malfeasance anymore is at Christmas time if you happen to watch It's a Wonderful Life. It's in the scene where George Bailey goes to Old Man Potter for help to cover the missing $8,000, money which Mr. Potter himself stole, but instead gleefully swears out an arrest for George, charging him with misappropriation of funds, manipulation, and malfeasance.
As a stockholder of the building and loan, I'm going to swear out a warrant for your arrest. Misappropriation of funds, manipulation, malfeasance.
Now, there's a picture of today's government, if ever there was one. Malfeasance, originating in the mid-1600s, borrowed from the French, means to do evil. It especially applies to wrongful conduct by public officials, and especially so to misspending the public's hard-earned money. If you think malevolence committed by public officials against the public, you've got the right idea. We have done away with budgets in this country. Budgets are more than simply how much money we'll spend. They constrain how that money will be spent and what it will be spent on. Instead, the Democrats and Republicans have given Joe Biden a slush fund, not a budget. It's why there never seems to be a bottom to the billions Biden has for whatever boondoggle comes his way. We see malfeasance in our utility companies, whose priority should be to provide the most power for the lowest cost. Instead, they pick and choose politically aligned power sources with no regard for costs. In fact, the more expensive it is, the more money goes to their politically aligned groups that support Democrats. I can understand why Democrats vote for Green New Deals. They get a lot of money back from it. But Republicans? They are literally voting to give their opponents money. This week, we are continuing our look at the abusive waste of money and energy on green energy, especially on hydrogen. Oregon and 6 other states just got $1 billion each of free taxpayer money to build a hydrogen hub because apparently there's no other place to spend it. But there is much more to it than just, oh, look, everyone, clean green energy. To talk about all that, I'd like to welcome Frank Lissay to the show. He is the president of Truth in Energy and Climate and a senior policy analyst for CFACT. And by the way, big news there. 2 weeks ago when we talked with the president of CFACT, Craig Rucker, we discussed how public outcry is critical to stopping offshore wind farms and in particular how it was making a real impact in New Jersey. Well, on Wednesday, November 1st, NBC reported that Ørsted, the Danish company that American taxpayers were paying to put up that New Jersey wind farm, they have scrapped the project, even though it cost them a $100 million fine and a $4 billion write-off to do so. So, Frank, welcome to the show, and thanks to you and everyone at CFACT for making that wind farm not happen.
Yeah, that's fantastic news. It really is. And some of its economics and the supply chain and the cost of all of this going up. And wind, offshore wind is wildly expensive to begin with. And it doesn't produce energy all the time, and you can't plan on it. It's intermittent, part-time, unpredictable. And those are all problems for electric grids. So we're being told a lot of things, or it's been covered up And we're pretending as if you can run electric grids on part-time wind and solar. And it segues into hydrogen because the idea is to save the energy when you overproduce wind and solar, which California does in the sunny days. They have too much solar power in the winter and sunny days when it's mild, not enough in the summer when everybody's using their air conditioning and it's warm. And what do you do with that extra electricity? Well, they want to do industrial processes to make supposedly green hydrogen and to save it for some other time. It's just really interesting how they shift from batteries now to hydrogen, but yeah. Hydrogen is just a storage device.
Yeah. It must be nice, actually, to be so flush with taxpayer cash so that you can write off $4 billion and not really bat an eye at it. But you're a senior policy analyst for CFAC, but you're also the president of Truth in Energy and Climate, as I mentioned. We know about CFAC, so talk to us a bit about your organization, whose name implies there's not a lot of truth out there about energy and climate.
Well, we do exactly what the title implies or says. We provide the truth of energy and climate. We talk a lot about that. We have a weekly e-newsletter, so you can go to our website and sign up for that, those who are interested. We have a lot of different articles there. And we continue to spread the truth and try to get it also into policymakers' hands as well, because we don't have a climate crisis. That really is just factually not the case at all.
Yes.
And in fact, more CO2 is good. It's a plant food. Worldwide crop harvests are up. I mean, I could go on and on, and that's not the topic of this. But check that out. We don't have an issue there. So all of this extra spending, and by the way, and I'm sure you know and people out there, but to remind them, we have a $33 trillion national debt. Mm-hmm. All of this money we're spending and wasting on these green energy projects and subsidizing wind and solar that we don't need are going on our national credit card debt. And we have about $1 trillion in debt payments now annually. And they're going to borrow this year already almost as much as we spent at deficit spent last year, $1.6 trillion. So this, you know, $7 billion, you know, they've allocated $9 billion for these hydrogen hubs. And they're probably going to have spend another hundreds or more billion subsidizing the green hydrogen that they're building. There's no end in sight for this.
Right.
All money we don't have. So it's really imperative and it's wrong that we're doing this when we're spending money we don't have. It'd be one thing if it was money we already had, but we don't.
No.
And that's going to crowd out things. Now, the debt service is more, that $1 trillion is more than our national defense budget.
Yes. And by 2026, we're going to be outspending Medicare on that as well. So you have a ton of great articles out there about these allegedly green energy schemes. What's your overall take on the green energy boondoggle? Would any of these really exist without massive tax subsidies, taxpayer cash for the manufacturer, the supply chain, the marketers who convince people to buy, and the cash for people who do buy? Could they exist on their own without that infusion of cash?
No, they could not. I mean, and that's the other part. Think about any business out there that in the case of wind and solar, they get 30% to build. Imagine you were going to build a house or you're buying a house and the government would pay for 30% of it. And then all your costs down the line or whatever you sell, you get another 30%. That's how much we're subsidizing this stuff. Without that, it wouldn't work. And now we saw with the Ørsted cancellation and offshore wind, and they were going to charge very high electric rates to pay for that. It can't even make it go on its own, even with tremendous subsidies. It's and the same thing with this hydrogen. They're going to do a 50-50 split. You know, Biden claims it's going to leverage far more than that, but they're going to do a 50-50 split on the beginning of this. So for every federal dollar we're sticking in and spending money we don't have, you're supposed to put up a dollar of private money. Why they'd risk more than that, I don't know, because why risk more of your own money than you don't have to?
Right.
And then it costs five times more to make a green hydrogen. And we'll talk about that process a little bit. But to make green hydrogen than the way all the hydrogen, nearly all the hydrogen in the world is made now with natural gas, coal, or oil. And five times more, and it's probably even more expensive than that. And that's just to make it. It isn't then to take the frozen liquid, it's the liquid frozen hydrogen at the end and store it and use it and develop all of that infrastructure. It doesn't pipe very well. It embrittles metal. There's a whole bunch of things that are wrong with hydrogen.
Yeah,
so they're trying to invent a storage device to answer the question of what do we do with that heavily subsidized wind and solar how could we actually have 100% wind and solar electric grids? And it really just isn't possible.
It really isn't. And I think at this point, it really does have to involve unicorns on some level in order to make this work. All right, we are just getting started with Frank Lissay, President of Truth in Energy and Climate. Lots more to discuss about the waste of energy and cash on green energy. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, where every week we are keeping an eye on big government. And this week we are keeping an eye on the big money big government is spending on a huge waste of your money. We are talking with Frank Lissay. He's the president of Truth in Energy and Climate. Their webpage is simply truthinenergyandclimate.com if you want to go visit, and you will want to do that. Frank also serves as a senior policy advisor for CFACT. And so big money, a big waste there, enormous amounts of cash and money being poured into these wind and solar and now hydrogen, which we'll get to in upcoming segments. Do you think that the average person, let alone the average taxpayer, has any real idea of just how much money is being spent?
No, people don't understand it at all. And it's really, it's not transparent. But it is starting to penetrate the, as their electric rates keep going up and they come back and ask for a 20%, a 30%, a 10%, a 15%. I mean, they're back asking for money all the time. And with a straight face in the same articles, and I saw one in Madison, Wisconsin, with Alliant Energy, they said, we're going to invest in a whole bunch of solar power, and we want to raise your rates by something like 12% in order to save you money. And they put it in the same article. I mean, it's we're going to raise your rates to save you money. It's mind-boggling, but people are getting pretty unhappy with their electric rates going up and up and up. California has electric rates double the national average. Oregon and Washington are doing better because they get a big chunk of their electricity from hydrogen or hydro dams from the dams, but they want to close those.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
It's bonkers, this idea that we can just not have electricity and be like a third world country. And it's terrible. South Africa let their coal resources just die off, not maintain them. And they haven't built enough. You can't run a grid on wind and solar. And they have literally 8 to 12 hours every single day with no electricity everywhere.
Yeah.
And California had rolling blackouts. They're back to rolling blackouts. It's a real possibility that we have not enough electricity, and that is the method, is to have rolling blackouts. And I lived in that in the 70s in California, and your community wouldn't have power for 2 to 6 hours. They'd let you know in advance, next Tuesday, we count on it, you're not, no power. And they just do it for different cities all over. It really is amazing. And until that starts happening, I think, and people are going to get more upset about it because they don't want to pay the extra costs. They don't think they should. And they've been lied to. They've been told wind and solar is cheap. Wind and solar is cheap. It's been drummed into us by propaganda.
Sure.
And then the reality is just the opposite.
I know that when they first started talking about this here in Oregon, and our local power provider was going to be adding some wind and solar and all that, and they kept using the phrase renewable. And so as a consumer, you see that and you think, oh, the source powering that energy is free, so the cost should come down. Except they've done the exact opposite.
Well, and the reason it's exactly the opposite is that you can't, first, when people understand, to make it really simple, and that's part of what we do at Truth in Energy and Climate, is that number one, an electric grid can store no power. So it has to have demand, has to be met by supply immediately. Yes. And they have very little tolerance at all. So it's pretty amazing that we have these large electric grids. And then with wind and solar, so you have demand. Demand typically peaks between 5 and 8 o'clock at night. And also when it's really hot or really cold, people use more electricity and turn things on. And that natural fluctuation then is joined by wind and solar fluctuation. And, you know, up in the Northwest, on the west side of the Rockies, as you all know, you live there, you don't have sunshine all that often. So you can't really depend on solar very much. And when it's cloud cover, you get none. And then when the wind stops, the wind only produces electricity. And that's the other big issue, is people think that misleadingness of all of this. If you're going to replace a 1,000-megawatt nuclear power plant or a 1,000-megawatt natural gas plant, they can actually produce 1,000 megawatts. Well, in theory, 1,000 megawatts of wind power can be produced when the wind is just right. The reality is they typically produce 30 to 35% of that 1,000 megawatts. So when you replace 1,000 megawatts of nuclear or hydropower or natural gas power, you have to build triple the wind power, and you still have the part-time problem. It doesn't go away. So in effect, we have to pay for a full-time grid and a part-time grid. It's as if you bought a wind-powered car that only worked when the wind blew, because some charlatan said it would be really great because you'd have to put any oil in it. And it sounds great. No oil, no gas, no, you know, it's going to be wonderful. It's renewable. And then you buy it and you find you can't take it to the kid's soccer game because the wind might stop blowing. Can't take it to work. So now you got to pay for two cars.
Right. Exactly.
Your car costs went up.
Yeah. I had watched an interview with you when you gave that example, and I'll make sure that we put that up on iSpyRadio.com. And that really was a great example. You have to have multiple cars in order to make up for the one that you have that is reliable. You brought up something about the grid there, that it's not really designed for the on-off, intermittent nature of solar and wind. And that was something that Craig had mentioned during our interview a couple of weeks ago. And that really caught me by surprise. I hadn't really heard of that before. And in order to change that, you have to basically transform the grid, and it's going to be adding millions and millions and millions of miles of transmission lines. I mean, that's not cheap.
No, that transmission miles are at least $1 million a mile, and often more, far more than that. And they are talking literally millions of miles of additional. So you're paying for a full part-time grid. You're taking a full-time grid that we're paying for and turning it into a part-time grid, because whenever the wind blows and sun shines, you have to turn it down. So our costs go up there, just like owning a car. The real cost, the most part of the car, isn't the gas you put into it. It's all the other stuff. It's paying the capital cost of buying it. It's paying for insurance. It's paying for maintenance. All those things go on with a coal, a natural gas, or a nuclear power plant, even if you use it part-time. So your costs go up, and then you have to pay for a transmission wire. So this is going to triple, quadruple our electric rates, and it's done exactly that in Germany and in Denmark. And, you know, think about that. If our electric rates... And so much for the social justice that these leftists talk about. You triple poor people's electric rates.
Sure.
That's a bad, bad thing for them.
Yeah,
they
absolutely.
Might even not be able to turn on, you know, supposedly we have this heat problem, and it's going to get worse in the future, according to them. They won't be able to afford air conditioning.
Yep,
and by the way, Biden's administration has increased regulations, or is attempting to do that, on air conditioners now to make them $1,100 more expensive.
Yeah. It's astonishing what they're doing here. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break a little bit early. Got more questions here for Frank Lissay. Everyone stay with us. We're going to be talking more about truth in energy and climate. And welcome back. We're talking about the myth of green energy. We're doing that with Frank Lissay. He is an expert on energy and environmental issues. His articles have appeared in the Washington Examiner, Washington Post, Real Clear Energy, Town Hall, and a bunch more. We're going to have probably 20 articles or more up on iSpy Radio this week. Just look for the show notes section. You can find those. And one of the things that I wanted to still delve into is you had mentioned about the on-off part-time power that these renewables have. Do these put out, because I've seen several articles about this and some dispute it, but do they put out enough power over their lifetime to pay for themselves?
I believe they do. It's really hard to tease that out because it all depends, you know, as a professor of mine said, and other smart people, figures don't lie, but liars figure. And most of it depends on what you choose for the inputs on the front end. Most of the stuff we're buying is produced, mined, smelted, put together in China. Now, China burns coal in a big way. And by the way, they're building hundreds of coal plants across Asia right now. The Africans would, too, if they could finance them. And those coal plants last 50 to 75 years. So the solar panels are built in the inner workings of wind towers are built in China, with coal power, which is often dirty, much dirtier there, then it's shipped across the ocean in tanker, in trucks, or you know, and then trucked to location. All of those things depends on how you build that in or don't build that in. So, you know, the kind of good questions. If you ignore all of those inputs, the mining, all of the, you know, and again, carbon is CO2, and it shouldn't be called carbon. It's like calling hydrogen water. It's not. It's CO2 is a plant food. We exhale 40,000 parts per million A thousand times more than what, or 100 times more than what comes out of it's in the atmosphere. So, how you measure it, it's kind of a great question, because I don't know that I've seen anything that really is definitive. I know that the leftists will, they spin everything, will claim it does. Hard to know.
Yeah. Well, I know that one of the articles that I remember, and I'll see if I can get this up there in time for this weekend's show page, that any solar panel basically north of Los Angeles will never put out enough energy over its lifetime to offset the money and the energy it took to make it. So anyway, you had mentioned too about China. I have seen reports from an energy watchdog in Arizona, but also even on Harvard, of all places, that have issued reports that for every 1 ton of rare earth mined and refined in China, it generates 2,000 tons of toxic waste, some of which is radioactive. And so you've got things like that, and it's not just expensive. It's got all that toxic waste. The solar and wind are not easily recycled. So what would it take for the left and the government to admit defeat on green energy? Or would they willingly bankrupt America to so-called save the planet?
Mark, they're so invested in this, and they've built a trillion-dollar industry around it. They're funding, they're funding all these professors at universities. I mean, your universities are in on this hydrogen hub money. They're in on the wind and solar money. They're in on it. Any of those who don't go along with it or start to talk about the things we're talking about are blacklisted. Their careers are ended. They stop getting invited to the cocktail parties. I mean, it's they're nasty and they're fully invested in this. It's not going away anytime soon. And until it truly fails, or people like in Europe start voting these people out, and I'd say they're even after our food supply, Mark. That's a whole nother topic. I'd love to talk to you about that at length. But they're after our food supply worldwide. And starving people on purpose is evil. I mean, it's just plain evil. Shorting us electricity is an inconvenience, but starving people on purpose is evil.
Yeah. And you mentioned the CO2. NASA itself has said that the Earth right now is 30% greener, looking down from space, 30% greener now than it used to be just, I think, in the 1990s.
Well, absolutely. And it's going to get greener yet. Worldwide crop harvest, virtually in every crop all over the world, everywhere, is getting better and better. And they're telling us we're going to have food shortages. And we will if they cut out nitrogen fertilizers, because it comes. It's not even from methane. They tell us it's because nitrous oxide, the nitrates that are in it, are bad in the atmosphere in a warming on their own. When 78% of the atmosphere is nitrogen and 20% is oxygen. And they want to limit nitrous oxide that's going in the air. It's a minuscule, minuscule part of the environment, but yet they're after it. So there's a whole bunch of this stuff that's just really misguided, ugly, evil. And it's about controlling all of us. I mean, that is what this is all about, is controlling us. Make a shortage. Put us all on CO2 rations. They're experimenting with and actually have CO2 tracking cards. So they're eventually, what they'd like to do is give us all a CO2 a CO2 tracking card, give us a CO2 ration, and then sell it to poor people that if, you have a poor lifestyle and you don't use all of your ration, you can sell it to rich people so they can continue on their merry ways. And you and I and middle-class people will run out of CO2 rations at the end of the month and not be able to buy a beer or a plane ticket or put a gallon of gas in our car or charge our electric vehicle.
Jeepers creepers. I am not surprised at all that that's on their wish list. You mentioned EVs, and of course, that's a huge push for why they're doing all of this green energy and whatnot, because they want everybody to switch to electric vehicles. And of course, we just simply don't have the electricity to do that. But it's, it comes down to money. But also at the same time, you've got manufacturers right now that are really starting to pull back and seeing electric vehicles as a colossal boondoggle, which is being driven, pun fully intended, by consumer choices. That consumers don't like the inconvenience, that they don't like the prices, and certainly don't like the prices if there aren't subsidies, and they don't like the poor return on investment when they go to sell those EVs. So do you think they're going to run into a reality problem where people are just done with this?
They are. The early adopters were out there, and now they're trying to sell them to regular people. First off, regular people don't want to spend the extra money. Secondly, the Texas Public Policy Foundation, TPPF, has done a study, and with all the subsidies and cross subsidies that they're doing with electric vehicles, we're subsidizing by regulations and taxes about $48,000 per electric vehicle. Yeah. Literally $48,000 per electric vehicle. And that's, and then Ford was selling theirs. They sold all, Ford sold all of theirs at $50,000 to $60,000 loss per vehicle. Ford on their electric division has lost $4 billion. That's all money that they've taken from the rest of selling their cars. Yeah, they're pulling back because people aren't buying those because they're not such a great deal. And if we were smart, and this is actually growing, is I think, you know, in this world of all of us, hybrids, a quick plug, make a lot of sense if you're trying to move away from it. Number one, one electric vehicle battery can make 50 or 60 hybrid vehicles. And they can either be plugged in or not plugged in. Mm. And then you have an electric motor that is more efficient than a gas or combustion motor. And the way our trains run, similar to a hybrid car, is they have an electric motor that's efficient, and they have a diesel engine that produces electricity to drive that motor. Why? Because the batteries are too big and too expensive and too heavy. Right. To run that train. So that makes sense. And people are those who want to go that route. And then you get 50 to 60 miles per gallon. And when your battery goes dead, you're running strictly on your gas generating electricity. And you also pick up some electricity from braking. That friction there translates into energy to put into that battery. Those make sense. And also in the world of shortages, that 50 to 60 batteries instead of just one makes so much more sense.
Oh,
but that's not where the leftists are pushing us.
No, the left doesn't make as much cash off those, I guess. So, all right, let's take a break. We are talking about truth in energy and climate today and doing that with Frank Lissay. Coming up, Oregon's new hydrogen hub. If you think we're wasting cash now, you have not heard anything yet. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Frank Lissay. He's the president of Truth in Energy and Climate. Their website is simply truthinenergyandclimate.com, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Today's show page is 13-44, and you can find that down in the show notes near the bottom of the page. Frank is also a senior policy analyst for CFACT. And Frank, we've been talking about green energy, and I'd like to really shift towards the real focus of this show, which is hydrogen. This dream of hydrogen energy is not new. It's been around for decades. The Hindenburg famously blew up. I think that's what a lot of people think of when they think of hydrogen. But presidents and administrations have been pursuing this as an alternative energy source since well back into the 30s. But why the new push for it?
Well, I think they've finally admitted, the leftists who have been forcing on and lying to us that wind and solar are cheaper and subsidizing it, have finally admitted, because the rubber's hitting the road and people want reliable electricity, even those kind of wacky people down in California want reliable electricity. They want it when you need your air conditioning, when it's really hot, and they don't like it interrupted, and they don't like super high prices. So they've admitted that you need to have storage of some sort, and there just isn't enough lithium and other metals to make millions, multi-millions, tens of millions of electric cars and grid scale batteries too. So this answers a question, at least it's a talking point, of how do we store energy from, say, the winter in California when you have too much sun power to save it till the summer. You can't put it in a battery because the batteries dissipate so fast. But you really can't use hydrogen for that either, because you lose some every single day because it's so small, it escapes from everything. But you know, never mind the facts. But it's another way to say we can store it. And also, many people are misinformed and think hydrogen is actually a primary energy source. But it's not. It has to be created, just like electricity has to be created. So you need a primary energy source to create electricity. So they want to take wind and solar to make electricity, a secondary energy source, and then use that electricity to make a third energy source, hydrogen. Talk about inefficiency.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So, and then they want to use this hydrogen to make electricity again so that we can have everything electric. Talk about inefficiency. Oh, unbelievable. That's this whole idea of a circular economy, that in fact it might, to do those things I just described, it might take more energy than the energy you yield out of it, because it costs you about 35% up front to make the hydrogen through the processes we're going to talk about. And then you lose about 30% when you use it. So you're already down. And then if you're trying to use it again, it's amazing.
Yeah. So let's talk about how it's currently produced, because we do use hydrogen now, it's mainly used for things like making fertilizer or even helping refine petroleum. How would you normally produce hydrogen in a normal business environment where the goal is to get as much of an extracted product for as little cost as possible?
Well, normally what you do is you start with methane, natural gas, and it's one carbon and it's four hydrogen, CH4. So it's got four hydrogens there, and you crack it. You heat it up and it cracks, it breaks apart. And then that carbon meets with the oxygen in the environment, in the air, that O2, that 20% in the air, and it turns into CO2, the beneficial thing in the atmosphere, and they say it's terrible. So it creates a lot of CO2, and it creates a lot of hydrogen, and does it really cheap. You get about a kilogram of hydrogen for about a buck. So it's a cheap way to make hydrogen, and it's the way it's made. And that's what we get nitrogen fertilizer out of, is we use that ammonia that's created within the hydrogen to make fertilizer, which feeds literally half the people in the world, literally. The 8 billion people, 4 billion rely on, and that's a whole other topic to talk about, that food source thing. But that's how it's made down, mainly with natural gas. They do make some with coal, which is even, they claim, dirtier, and it has other particulates because coal has other things in it and other impurities. And a small amount is made with oil. And then some of it, they're experimenting now with adding that, create it from methane, and then add it into natural gas and say you're doing something smart and a favor. Why wouldn't you just use the natural gas to make electricity or to burn it, in our stoves and our heating units, our furnaces? It's really amazing. But this is the crazy world we live in right now. Yeah. Inefficient, wasteful.
Right. So let's talk about how the greenies want to produce it a little bit more. One of the articles that you had mentioned, well, of course, it takes an enormous amount of energy to produce this energy that we're going to use. It needs 13 times more water than hydrogen that it makes, and 40 times more water to cool. So to be clear, for every gallon of hydrogen, it sounds like we need 53 gallons of water. Am I understanding that correctly?
You're understanding that absolutely correctly. And you have to start with purified water. So, in the California case, it's also getting $1 billion to do this. The crazy lefties down there don't want to desalinate water. Tampa, the city of Tampa Bay in Florida desalinates water to give most of their city water they have. And what the byproduct of that is extra salty water. And if you put it back in the right way, it doesn't harm the environment at all because the ocean's filled with salty water. But you got to start with, so that's another cost. So if you start with ocean water, you have to desalinate it. So that's another cost that would go on top of all of this. So yeah, so how you can have hydrogen hubs east of the Rocky Mountains in this north, the northwest example that you have now, and they're talking about 9 hubs, some of them in Montana and many of them in the eastern Oregon and Washington, where you have water right issues and water restrictions and shortages of water. Maybe this ties in with Biden trying to stop grazing and stop usage of our national lands that they own there that have been leased for literally hundreds of years, and grazing and all the bad things that'll come with that. You stop grazing it with cows. Before cows, there were buffalo, and they'd eat all the grass. If you let the grass go wild, it'll die. It'll have huge fires at some point when enough builds up. But never mind those facts. That might be the reason why, so they can divert those water rights over to hydrogen.
Mm. Yeah, and meanwhile, California just today flushed 7,559,743,200 gallons of fresh water out of their reservoirs down into the ocean. Why? Because they want to adjust the saltwater mix for Delta smelt. And by the way, zero smelt have been seen in the fall survey since 2017. So I guess there goes 142 million gallons of hydrogen that they could have made. All right, everyone, stay with us. How dumb are we as a society when it comes to green? It's not just stupid spending. It is dumber than that. More with Frank Lissay. CPAC policy advisor Frank Lissay is an expert on energy and environmental issues. He has articles in the Washington Examiner, Washington Post, Real Clean Air Energy, and a bunch of others. He is the president of Truth in Energy and Climate, and you can find that by heading to truthinenergyandclimate.com. So I had mentioned going out of that break there about how dumb are we. Before we get to that, though, I'd like to step back a little bit and talk some more about the enormous amount of energy that it takes to do this type of hydrogen. What's weird, though, is as I was reading your articles, I remember my 7th, 8th, and 9th grade science teacher creating hydrogen. He used a simple form of electrolysis. Didn't take a huge amount of electricity. Why is it that what we're doing now takes so much more energy? Is it simply because scale, or have they changed just the way that they do this?
Well, it's really doing things at scale. And when you do it at scale, the green hydrogen, and it's interesting because the best articles that really explained it in depth that I found early on when we first started talking about hydrogen more than a year ago have all gone to dead links because they don't really want you to know what I'm going to tell you right now. Is the common method in doing it at scale, you have to do this on a large scale, big factories, big factories using lots of electricity and energy, is you first take that purified water. That's why you need that 13 times. You need 9 times more purified water, but you need some to purify it. So you start with river or groundwater, you purify it, then you run it into the electrolyzer, you heat it to 2,000 degrees, and then you electrocute it. And that cracks the oxygen hydrogen molecule of the water. You let the oxygen escape and you take that hydrogen now. Now you have to super chill it. That's where the other 40 times more water comes in, is you got to make that cold. And you have to make it almost absolute zero, like more than 400 degrees negative to get almost absolute zero so you liquefy it. Otherwise, it's such a small molecule, it contains hardly any energy, that it's so big you couldn't really power anything with it. So you have to freeze it down. And now you've got cold, super cold liquid hydrogen. Doesn't become a solid like ice, but it's liquid. Then you have to compress that to 10,000 PSI, about triple the normal scuba tank. So now you've got super compressed, frozen liquid hydrogen, and you have to put it in tanks to contain it. Then the problem with it is you can't run it through pipelines very easily because it escapes easily and it embrittles metal. So virtually all metals, except for aluminum, interestingly, it will go about breaking it up and cracking it. And then if it escapes in an enclosed area, like in your house or in a building or in the Hindenburg and inside of a, if it gets lit inside of a building, it will blow up big time. Or even if it's in between an area where it can stay, not escape easily, it has an easy flash point and it burns super hot and it explodes. Now, if it's in an open air area, it just goes off in the atmosphere. Boom, it's gone. And in fact, hydrogen is escaping from the Earth's gravity field all the time. So our Earth is bleeding, our gravity field is bleeding hydrogen away from us. It's so small, it floats away. And that whole process has to be run really 24/7. It's not something you turn on in the morning when the solar comes up. You don't have solar up in Oregon and Washington for a lot of the time, but in Southern California maybe. So you can't turn it on in the morning and turn it on in the afternoon. You can't turn it on when the wind starts blowing and then stop it 2 hours later when it stops. So you have to run it 24/7. So the whole idea of having green hydrogen produced is a bunch of garbage.
Yes.
And number two is, where is all that wind and solar going to come from? Oregon gets 7%. Now, these are from Oregon.gov, and they somehow haven't updated the last couple of years. I don't know why, probably because they haven't made any progress. They got to hide that. But you get 7% of your energy from wind and almost nothing from solar, and you get 3.5% from nuclear. The bulk of it, about 57%, comes from coal and natural gas. And in fact, you get more from coal than natural gas. And hydrogen is about 38%. So where are you going to get all this green energy? And where are you going to get all this water, you know, east of the Rocky Mountains? I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you said hydrogen is 38%. You mean hydroelectric dams are 38%.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, hydroelectric. It says hydro here, so I misspoke myself. Yeah, it's hydroelectric dams. Yeah. So the dams in Oregon. And you guys in Oregon are crazy enough to be talking about, you know, one of your best green, reliable energy sources about closing them down to save some salmon instead of building more salmon ladders ways to let them get around.
Yes, the salmon ladders. We have been saying that for almost over a decade now. Instead of pulling out the dams, why not offer a prize to come up with a new and improved fish ladder that can make a fish passage a lot easier, and then we can keep the dams and the fish? This isn't hard. But speaking,
you
speaking
could even
of the
catch them with nets on the bottom and haul them up by manual and drop them in the river again, and you'd have just fine. Those little fish will come back down the river and through the dam and as it goes on. I mean, it's absurd that they can't talk about these sort of things.
Yes, yeah, it is. But if they use power from those, which is steady, would that qualify these hydrogen hubs as using green energy, or does the power have to come from solar and wind to be considered green?
Well, it would qualify it as green energy, but why would you take perfectly good electricity and cut it by at least a third, if not more, in order to turn it into hydrogen? Why wouldn't you just use it as electricity?
Because somebody's making $1 trillion from it.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's what this is all about, folks. This is all about the money, and the problem is they're shearing all of us sheeple a little at a time.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I'd like to come back on that point. We are up against the break. We'll come back and talk about how dumb we are. Didn't get to that, but we will next. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now on the iSpy Radio Show. We've been keeping an eye on the enormous amounts of funds that are being wasted on green energy and doing that with Frank Lissay. Going to be a ton of great articles this week on show 1344 on this week's show page, and you're going to want to look for those. Very informative. And, you know, and reading through those articles and listening to you today and the enormous amounts of money and cash and energy just to create energy that isn't even as efficient as the first energy we used to create that energy, it really is not about saving the planet. It is all about the money, because you cannot say that you're out there saving the planet if it requires 2,000 tons of toxic waste to get 1 ton of the minerals that you so desperately need, and we don't even have enough of those to begin with. So I'm just stunned by how people aren't seeing this, that yes, it is in fact about the money. You have been scammed. It's not about saving the planet at all.
It really isn't. It just is amazing. And they sell it to us. They propagandize us. And they, in fact, it's the upside down world. And that is the purpose of propaganda, is to create an alternate reality. And almost everything that they're telling us on a regular basis about the climate and about the green energy is actually upside down.
Yes.
It just is unbelievable. And they are shearing all of us a little at a time. And why I'm longer term optimistic is that, you know, at some point people are going to get sick of having their electric rates go up year over year, 7 to 15% or more every single year. And we can't continue to deficit spend forever. We may have already hit the tipping, to talk about tipping points in the climate. We already may have hit the tipping point of you know, $1 trillion in debt payments.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So we can't keep spending money we don't have. And actually, in the other whole other aspect of this is most of this we're buying from China through China. And China has just announced that they're going to stop shipping graphite out of the country.
Yeah.
So they're going to make it so we can't develop battery factories here, because there's no they literally have almost 100% of the graphite in the world. But they'll sell us batteries. But they won't let us make them ourselves, because they won't sell us the graphite. So they control all of this. So, you know, is this all part of the part and parcel of empowering China, borrowing money to send to them to sell us dirty things that they can make cheap because they use cheap coal, reliable coal? We don't. I mean, all of these sort of things fit in together in a larger picture. And we really need to stop sending our money to China, especially money we don't have, that we have to pay interest on.
Stop funding your enemies. That's what it boils down to. You know, we've been talking about saving the planet, and I came across this in one of the articles, and it really does show how dumb we are. Here we are trying to push this clean energy under hydrogen. And of course, it's all under the guise that we're fighting CO2, because CO2 is the enemy. It's the enemy of the enemy. We've heard that for decades now about climate change. But here's how stupid it is. There is a clean hydrogen standard of 2 kilograms of CO2 emitted for every 1 kilogram of hydrogen produced. So here we are fighting CO2. But if we move forward with hydrogen, we're putting out twice the amount of CO2 for the little bit of hydrogen that we get. How stupid is that?
That's the supposed blue hydrogen, where they're going to take natural gas, crack it the way we mentioned earlier in the program, and then they're going to carbon capture it. But there's just one little problem. At scale, carbon capture has not worked anywhere in the world. No place in the world. And the only real place that we have to store the carbon that is captured, the CO2 that is captured, it's not carbon, it's CO2. It's like calling hydrogen water again. The only place we can capture that CO2 and put it is back in the oil and natural gas fields to extract more of that. So that's part of the reason that the oil and natural gas, the fossil fuel industry is getting in on this scam, except for the poor coal is left on the sidelines, is they're getting in on the scam too, because they can, you know, get all these subsidies. They become subsidy farmers rather than people, you know, who are producing needed products at a fair price. And this is part of their circular economy, I guess. They're going to raise the cost of everything to scam us into taking perfectly good natural gas, turning it into hydrogen at a great cost, and then putting some of that CO2 at a subsidized thing back in the ground to harvest more natural gas. I mean, it just makes so much sense.
Well, and of course, then there's all the issues, as you mentioned previously, about just getting it to the end user as well. You got pipelines, you're going to have to tank it, or tanker truck it. There do appear to be some lower power, smaller scale options. For example, in 2001 at Honda's California lab, they designed a solar-powered hydrogen refueling station, and then there are also some cheaper, smaller electrolysis models. I came across one from Richard Bourgeois, who worked for GE. Apparently, that was had some amount of hope. So, and I know actually back in the day, Edison actually had the dream of, rather than these big transmission lines, you'd have essentially a small generator on every block. So does hydrogen have any potential role, or is it always just going to take far more energy to produce than you'd ever get out of it?
Well, it's a question of scale. They do have a green hydrogen plant in Iceland that's working and operational. It's working off. They have lots of heat because of the volcanoes there. So they're using the thermal heat from the earth. And yep, it's working, but they only make 100 gallons an hour.
Well, it's absolutely crazy that we're spending billions of dollars for such a poor exchange of energy and all the electricity to get that poor amount of energy. There's just so much more to talk about, but unfortunately, we just don't have time for it. Frank Lissay, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks very much. Please check out our website, Truth in Energy and Climate. Sign up for our weekly energy and climate newsletter. And thanks for listening, folks.
You can read it for yourself straight from the dead horse's mouth that the green dreamers keep beating. Head to iSpyRadio.com, and in the links and information section down near the bottom, you'll find the PDF H2IQ Hour presentation from the U.S. Department of Energy, December 2021. On page 75, you'll see that despite CO2 being the enemy, clean hydrogen is deemed clean if the amount of CO2 emitted is, quote, 2 kilograms or less produced at the site of production per kilogram of hydrogen produced. 2 times the CO2 than the hydrogen. But why should that matter? The only thing that matters is the money they get out of it, and they will squeeze you until you finally say something. It worked in New Jersey to stop that wind farm. It can work here as long as you speak up. All it takes for evil to succeed is for good people to not email, to not speak up, and to remain silent when it's so easy just to write in and say stop. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.